you're doing it all wrong. If you have 10 people on your team, you try to do 10 people's job, right? And you run around and you try to be part of everything. And it takes some time before you realize that leadership is about setting the team and trusting the team. When you finally get to that point where you go, I'm the least clever one at the table.
Welcome to Evolve Leadership, the arena where high-achieving leaders are challenged to redefine their limits. My name is Angus Nelson. I grew up in the United States, and I now live in Lisbon, Portugal. I'm an executive coach, and I've spent my career advising and training leaders from startups to Fortune 500 companies. And here's what I've learned. An old, ineffective leadership framework will always keep you on a hamster wheel, consumed with work-life balance, burnout, and stress. Here on the show, each week we'll help you rethink the path to achievement. We'll help you discover new principles, new philosophies to the modern leader. Look, the world is relentlessly changing, demanding a new era of leaders. It's time to redefine your limits. So enter the arena, my friend. It's time to evolve. Well, hey there. Welcome to the Evolve Leadership Show. I'm your host, Angus Nelson, and I am thrilled to introduce Rasmus Holst, the visionary CEO behind LMS 365, who has skillfully scaled their company from bootstrap to $30 million ARR. This guy is very human, such a likable dude. I would love to work for somebody like this. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. Let's jump into that interview right now. Well, hello there, Rasmus. So great to hang out with you today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Angus. Pleasure that you wanted to have me here. So I'm really looking forward to this.
You're experiencing much warmer weather in New York than you would typically be having in Denmark right now.
Yeah, I made the decision a year ago to move back to Denmark. So now I'm experiencing the cold winter and remembering how cold that actually is. So it's a lovely day to be in New York when it's 17 degrees and sunny outside. I will take advantage and walk everywhere I possibly can. Yes, absolutely.
Glorious. Glorious. Yes. And as a European, walking everywhere is a normal, as my glutes will attest. Now I have the best legs and butt just because I walk everywhere.
But I'm that's not what we're Sting and walking down Fifth Avenue and Englishman in New York. I think that's where we're at.
Yes, that's a good Sting reference there. So let's go back into time. I want to kind of track your story a little bit. We're today talking about, you know, what is it like, the difference between leadership of, you know, how you started to how you've become? And then number two is perspectives of European startup versus American startup, because you've walked all those shoes. So if you could, like, take me back to what was it like growing up in Denmark with perhaps, you know, these aspirations of what could be.
Let's just date myself first. So I'm 50. And that means that when you grow up and you think of technology as it is today, that was not what we thought about at that time. I think I grew up in a household with two teachers as parents. So my outlook was literally the town. It was where we were at and their profession and seeing what they did for other kids and everything like that. It was never at that point thinking, hey, I'm going to make it big in the U.S. Just to give a highlight, you couldn't even watch like NBA or NFL in Denmark. That one hadn't even arrived. That arrived when I was like 15 or something like that. So you weren't really thinking of that. And then we were thinking of, we got our first computers when we were 14, right? So my aspirations as where would you want to take this was probably, or very likely at that time, I'm going to do something in Denmark. It's going to be something different than what my parents are doing. It would have something to do with engineering. And I do think that what they did instill in me is that a sense of internationalism. In Europe, at least, we have plenty of countries. Mine may not be that big, but we have plenty of countries. And the one thing I'll always thank my parents for is to prioritize that our finances went to travel and not to furniture and fancy clothes. So every time there was an opportunity, get in the car, go wherever in Europe. So already by my childhood, I'd visited most countries in Europe just by doing that. So you were never just used to where you came from, but used to the outlook of we need to go somewhere.
I love that. My mom's from New Zealand. That's one of the things she said growing up was, as soon as you get out of school, grab a backpack and go. And there's not a greater education than travel and seeing the world. And with that, you went to college. Was it engineering? Was that your major? Is that what you were studying?
Yeah, I studied an engineering major. And therefore, at that time, you started to look at A, the internet, and two, mobile. As the two things that were really changing. Think about this again. I may not seem that old, but I grew up in dial-up internet. I mean, this is the crazy thing. Starting out working for Nokia was my first mobile phone. I've been known to say I never need a mobile phone, right? Before this, and now you can't go any 5 meters without having it with you. So for me at that point, those were the interesting things, trying to get dial-up to work and then your parents screaming at you that now they couldn't call grandma and all of those kind of things. And then experiencing that revolution, because I do think that that has as big of a change, changed the world as much as we see some of social media has done, AI, whatever have you, the cloud has done in later generations. But really, internet and mobility was my generation's big transformation.
So you went from kind of behind the scenes, building, shaping, you know, in terms of school. And then when you got to Nokia, you went to, I think it was HP. I can't remember some of the other stuff that was in your trajectory. What was some of the things that like moved you from actually building to selling, managing, operating?
Look, I was the luckiest one out of school. Nokia had opened a site in Copenhagen because they couldn't find more engineers in Finland. So my first job was literally a product manager for the web interface for prepaid top-ups at that point, right? And what you were pushed into was immediately with your first job, something that had enormous growth. Number two was global in its outlook. I never had a job where I really think it was Danish first as a language. And you got to work with colleagues from all over the world because whatever product I brought out needed to be installed. The Philippines was a huge prepaid. Italy was a huge prepaid everywhere, right? The US was still on a different standard now. They're aligned. But hey, at that time, US wasn't really a market because they were using CDMA. So that was how that went. And then you would say, I actually transferred from that to one of the things that I would call the Danish PayPal. And you go like, hey, that's a big word. But it was a small Holbæk-based company. Holbæk is an even smaller Danish city that did internet billing. And this was the transition from dial-up to ADSL at that time. But in that company, you met a pretty amazing set of people. One of the founders had no fear of what everything could be and went like, we need to speak to somebody who knows about internet. And jokingly, a guy named Thomas, and I'll get to that, told him, hey, talk to John Chambers, obviously the CEO of Cisco. And Nils went off to try and talk to him. He never got to him, but he got the first $1 million Cisco ever invested outside of North America. And at that point, I think you get this sense that scale up and startup is something that you can actually pursue and that you can be great at. Because in the same company was the CEO and founder of Zendesk, Mikkel Svane. And in the same company, this Thomas Petersen founded OneLogin. I think we count now that there are like just over 20 exits done by people who were part of that little company. And we, by the way, took all the things over the year 2000 from, hey, almost no people, 450 people, going great. Oh, we missed the window. You end up and we sold the business to Intech at 150 people-ish. Investors, General Atlantic Partners, Index and Vertex. So already at that age, you kind of see what that scale-up journey can look like.
And how old would you have been by then?
I would have been in my early 30s, right? And then you got to manage your first teams and all of that. And then actually moved to continue with a lot of this telecoms stuff, which was in roaming. And if you ever talk about international, this is one of those businesses where everyone in the world actually deals with you. And there, you could say that was the moving up in ranks, ending up running all of our product things and all of that. And this was really growing up in terms of leadership. It was a larger company. It was larger revenues, all of those types of things, and getting a feel for what it takes to operate large-scale businesses.
And then you get to Oracle. You went on to some other companies, and leadership started growing and becoming part of your story. So you went from, hey, I'm just going to be behind the scenes engineering, to now I'm leading, you know, people. What was some of the transition for you in terms of stepping into that role, wearing those bigger shoes, and now carrying more responsibility?
I think I am as many others who start in leadership and has a sense of I need to accomplish things, and you're driven and you want to be winning and all of that. The first thing you realize is that you're doing it all wrong, because what you start out doing is just to try and do, if you have 10 people on your team, you try to do 10 people's job, right? And you run around and you try to be part of everything. And it takes some time before you realize this, that leadership is about setting the team and trusting the team and giving the team direction and not be part of everything and running around and try to do that. So that was one of those journeys that you can feel that shapes you, because that transition really, you often transition from being the best on the team at doing a job or a function, whether that's sales or product or whatever. And then you figure out, I still need to be the best at this. And now when I sit in the CEO role, you just look at my team and I go, I could never do what our CFO does. And I could maybe play along with what our CMO does and what our sales and what product does, but I'm not the best anymore. And that is a great feeling when you finally get to that point where you go, I'm the least clever one at the table. Everyone at their functions are better than me, and I just have to steer and set the direction. And you underestimate how much time you need to spend on setting the direction, getting everyone aligned, and instead you try to do all the tasks, which is really not healthy in any shape or form.
And I work with a lot of leaders who go through this transition. In fact, for many of them, that's why they work with me, is because they get into that place where they're the bottleneck and they don't even realize it. They're just like you described. They're doing all the things. They've got their hands in all the stuff. They're attending all the meetings. They're having one-on-ones with every single person on the team every week. It's like, you don't realize how much time you are just sucking away. You're not leading. You're just in the weeds. Who was it that stepped into your life, or what was the circumstance that got your attention to see it differently?
I think that's one defining moment, actually, which is I'm at this rowing company. I run a big team. I have the product team under me and all of that. And a very stern Frenchman, Guy Dubois, his name, who was the CEO at the time, calls me into his office, actually together with our CTO. And he sets me down and he, in a very stern form, tells me, Rasmus, you're great at what you do, but you lack perspective. And what he was really saying was, you are great at understanding what the product needs to do and build business cases. And he would trust me to build any business case that could tell him that this would make us millions. And he said, you've never carried the bag. You've never been out there selling, so you have no clue what the thing next to you it really is. You think you know, but you don't know what it means to be only at 60% and the quarter closes in 3 days or any of those stress factors. So before you move anywhere in your career, I'm now going to put you in sales. And literally, like, from next week, you will be running a sales region. And by the way, our sales review is on Tuesday. This was on a Thursday or something like that. And I went like, but that's not really what I want. And he went, but that's what you need. And what he basically did to our CTO was to say, and you don't understand what Rasmus is telling you, so you just run product for a time. It ended up being a little bit more than 6 months, but I will definitely say that he's right. And I didn't know what was happening next to. And I'm so happy that I've had also almost now split my career between sales and product, because it gives you a really nice depth of understanding. But had he never done that, I don't think I would have ended up where I am today. And the other thing is, he then, on top of this, and if ever anyone's been a sales leader and you can, you know that you can tear apart any forecast, right? And hey, this is my fourth. And I did all, I made all the mistakes you want to be making. I called my budget exactly, and I hadn't control of the pipeline, obviously, and would just dig into four different things that would not make sense and all that. And basically just told me a long story about how much market value we would have lost if we were a publicly traded company. And then he sent me back out and said, you can come back on Thursday. And I did the same exercise, but I learned from it, and I got better, and I pulled myself together, and I had to talk to the team and all of those kind of things. But I also look back at the team that he had at the time. Most of us made it to CEO, and he's gathered us a couple of times where he takes us to the Royal Automotive Club in London, and he just checks in on his team, because he goes like, this is my statue for the future. He was super successful in his own right, but there are people who founded their own VC funds. I think we are five CEOs also for that team. Then one has retired, and my CTO colleague, he moved back to CTO, and he's run CTO positions ever since. But I think he has a much greater perspective. He and I were never unaligned after that story.
So having a good leader that can see, can cultivate, can pull out of you greatness. Like, how is that translated now into your leadership?
So if you think about my leadership, contrasting what happened here, first and foremost, you need to realize what your style is. The stern, very direct, very almost like fierce, punchy eyes, so that you know this feels, you feel the weight if you're on the receiving end of it, pushed me, and that was what I would need. I know that I could never do that, because that's not the way my style would work. But what I think is absolutely true is that he cut all the crap away and went like, this is what you need, and told me in no uncertain terms. I think also that he would have seen, had I not made it past this, he would also have said, I can't support you as a future CEO or whatever. You will have to be on your own and find your own way. So it's literally a litmus test of being direct with feedback. And I think that's a thing that I've taken to heart. The more direct you are, and then what I add maybe more than this relationship was, I add a lot of transparency, which means that if people understand the full picture, and I try to give them as much as they can so they understand the full picture, allowing them to make more decisions, but then giving them direct feedback on those decisions, is my way of accomplishing the same, but in my style and in my way, because I have no way of replicating that, and I don't think that would suit me, and it would feel fake from the moment you try it. And that's why sometimes when you read a book, just think about, does this work for me? Is this my style? Is this something I can pull off long term? Because that's what you really want, because then it becomes genuine and it becomes genuine, and it becomes lasting, the impact you deliver onto people.
Before we continue, I want to acknowledge something important. By listening to this show, you are taking a step that many leaders are frankly unwilling to do, and that is invest in yourself. And to honor your commitment, we want to invest in you. Our research shows that elite leaders excel in six core areas, and we've developed a quick 2-minute assessment to help you highlight your strengths, uncover your blind spots, and see how you stack up against other top leaders. You'll get a personalized report that pinpoints the areas you can address to evolve into that next level leader. So, to see where your leadership stands, go to rankmyleadership.com. Now, back to the show.
So let's flash forward in your career. So then you go and you serve general manager, you served in some other leadership roles where you served bigger teams, you had bigger mandates. Then you were CRO, so your chief revenue officer at Wire. And then an opportunity comes for CEO. Like, what was this transition? What was this opportunity? How did this present itself?
So this is, again, something of keeping things alive for a long time. There were executive recruiters who were trying to tell me for a long time, hey, Rasmus, you should step into a CEO role. I've worked with the same CEO for nearly 14 years and a fellow Dane. And we were part of exits to nearly the tune of $1 billion over the course of our combined journeys together. And whenever we raised funds or something, I knew that I'm running the company. He's out raising funds and doing all those kind of things. And so I knew I could do it. I had no doubts about this. But I also turned down a lot. And I will say to the people that kept believing in me and kept giving me opportunities, that's one thing. And those were executive recruiters from the higher echelons. And at the point where this presented itself, I'm in San Francisco. I regularly gave some speeches at our Danish embassy in San Francisco about, hey, Danes, they don't see the opportunity. They stop halfway through because it's still going well, but they can't find the next step and all those kind of things. And mostly, I think 9 out of 13 unicorns coming out of Denmark actually moved to San Francisco before they became unicorns. So when this thing arose, I went like, if I don't take this, I should stop giving lectures because then I don't even dare myself. And this looked exactly like the things that you could see happening. It had all the numbers, and Silicon Valley would be easy to fund. It would be a great opportunity. You could definitely convince people. And I went, this is it. And I also felt that, again, it's back to this, what is your style? I know that even though I worked with Morten for a long time, our styles are different. We put emphasis on different things. And I think the ultimate test is to get to set your own team and see if you can pervasively make that sense of, hey, what is the CEO? What is the culture we generate? I can't generate culture as one person, but you could set a tone for how the company behaves and how the company does something. And I felt like at this point, I was mature enough, I had learned enough, I'd managed in so many cultures. I've been lucky enough to manage everything from development team, product teams, sales teams, marketing teams, strategy, everything across the whole bucket. So I felt like I had a good understanding of the depth of the business. And on that note, it was an easy yes, actually.
And you stepped into this role because it sounds like you finally believed in yourself enough to execute. Get in this company. Not so long ago, you guys gathered in Portugal. Woohoo! A little hat tip there to little Portugal. And you introduced this thing, human success. What does that look like?
So this is essentially what I think is, and this is, again, you're lucky enough to meet people along the way that are able to put better words to your own thoughts. Because I've always believed that the more you invest in people, the better they will do. And I'm always curious to the fact that we call customer success, success for our customers, and we call our people human capital. I've always been thinking, oh, what is this? And I've for the longest time in my leadership role, I've always told people, hey, we're here together. This is not for life. So I'm going to make you as good as I possibly can so you have opportunities to go to the next level. And essentially, we're just trying to figure out what is that core of human success, where we invest in people instead of just making them resources that needs to do something. And it really is, for us, it's closely related to our product. So that's also a unique opportunity, which is that we believe that if you have an engaged employee, someone, they are very valuable for today because they will show up and ooze optimism, positivity, get stuff done. It's also about learning that you're valuable, not just now, but you're valuable to the future. And you're also performing. So not just you're engaged and you're, hey, we're doing something, but also that you understand how to hit goals and get there and all of those types of things. And if you have all of those three things, we honestly believe that you have the ingredients for a great colleague, a great culture, a great team. And I think you can cultivate a lot of people who will move out of that team to bigger leadership positions going forward. And that's really how I think about it. And I think it also forces us, because we actually have a solution that's very close to this, it forces us to be our own best case study, which is, as a CEO, you need to think about who are you hiring? Are they fitting the culture? Are they just good at the subject matter? Or do they also fit the culture and boost what we do on an everyday basis and kind of inspire and set the same tone into the team that at least I want to make sure that we have?
That sounds like a fascinating hiring model, to find people that can fit and tick the boxes and put in that kind of intention to make sure that you find that culture fit.
And then remembering that you'd need different characters. So actually one of the hires where you go, okay, so how's this going to pan out? We've been a successful scale up and got very, very far on no funding, so on bootstrapped. And obviously I wanted to have a CFO to take us to the next level. CFO is a different position, right? It's usually very precise. It's very meticulous. It's all kinds of things. And I also wanted to hire a little bit the antidote to me, because very precise and all of that has grown less on me as we've moved on. So I knew I needed somebody to be a wingman that would essentially encompass those qualities. And then at the same time, you could now end up with someone who's just like a hard-nosed CFO and just killing the mood of everyone else, right? And again, I'm super lucky that I find somebody who's very, very precise on everything we do. And yet he's also the guy, now you mentioned our Portugal offsite, he's the guy who goes out and buys the biggest, this, I think every finance alarm bell must have went off, but he's the one who goes out and buys the biggest confetti gun that can also shoot t-shirts and stuff like that to make sure that we celebrate our heroes of the year and all of that, and runs around in his tuxedos and does a great show. So as a human being, he's exactly what you want. As a finance and a CFO, he's a hard noser. So you get the gist of who the person is, but with the quality of the work that you want. And that's, again, it's difficult, and you need to be, of course, very deliberate about what you do with that, because I do think that sets a tone for the team.
Have you had someone where you had challenge, whether it be culture fit or attitude, or maybe even they had their own personal challenge, I don't know, but some opportunity that's like your favorite story of being able to step in as a leader? And as we started this conversation, and someone saw in you possibility and then spoke to you really straight in a way that got your attention, is there somebody that, I mean, I'm not saying name who this person is, but a story of somebody that you feel like, I had an opportunity to transform someone's career?
I do. And it's a very interesting story, actually, because it's someone I hire during COVID on remote. I'm in the US. I can't travel to Europe. I can't get back. I hire her in our German office to run our customer success. She's an absolutely amazing person in terms of what she can do and how talented she is. There's no doubt about it. And yet you feel that there's a sense of, there's always a slide missing, which is the one that goes, hey, and this is all the things that are wrong. So the one thing I wanted to give to Shannon was that, hey, why don't you just think about also having, we actually dubbed it the black slide. So she deliberately had one with a black background where she was supposed to write all the things that we needed to fix or that was wrong. So we didn't sugarcoat it, but we were honest with each other about what we need to fix. And we grew her team, all of us. And actually before I've ever met her, she calls me and resigns and goes, Rasmus, I've been given this opportunity to run a much larger team at a much bigger company. I'll be VP, all of that. I knew at this time we could never scale up to, I mean, our team was a tenth of what she would actually be running. But yet she came back and said, like, I think you've done all you ever could to make me realize what it would take to run a team like this. And I can only say I knew this would happen. At some point, I think as a leader, you know, if you can't provide the opportunity, if the company's not growing fast enough or you're not generating enough leadership, this will happen. So I had the sense that this would happen, but there is no day that I was more happy than that day, because the conversation we had was essentially, we've never met. You've impacted my career. I know I can do better in the future. And you will see, if you spot LinkedIn and all of that, you will see that there's still a huge respect for each other and what we've helped each other do, because she helped me a lot on the team and actually managing the situation when you're not in Germany, try to help me do some extra things and all of that, because she was in time zone. So those are the kind of moments where you go, this is special. And I think that would be a standout story where we didn't even meet. So you didn't even feel that she was coming to work and not feeling good or feeling great, or you couldn't sense that, right? It was all over the air.
I love that story. And so now I want to take it a little bit deeper as we kind of bring this in for a landing. As a leader, we all know it's not always rainbows and butterflies. And we carry a lot of weight, a lot of responsibility. And as you stated before, sometimes you got to learn how to carry the bag. Like, what have been some of the moments where the pressure is mounting? You have the self-doubts. What are some of the tools or individuals that you have to pull into your corner to get you out of that hole?
That's one person for sure. My wife has to have a huge accolade for all of this. We deliberately take time out on weekends. We have a little mini Australian shepherd that needs a long walk, but it actually serves two purposes. We walk together, and there's just her and I, and we'll get to talk and actually get to talk through a lot of things. I actually met her at engineering studies, so she has a good understanding of what this is. And she has obviously a huge support for me and allowing me to kind of just unload the problems and being good at just asking questions and sometimes just being there, and sometimes actually going the other way, especially on people matters, having a good sense of where that, and she knows what pushes me, because often financial issues and stuff like that, I always feel we can work through. Pressure can be high when you're trying to close a deal or when you're raising a financing round or something. You do feel that, hey, this is on you, because you set off the company in one direction and go, this can go either two ways. Either we get funding and this will be a different growth story, or you don't. And then all of a sudden, all of the plans are like, hey, what are we going to do now? So you feel that, but mostly it's people issues where that gets to me more than the mechanics of the business, you could say. And this is probably, again, back to this, what is human success? Who do you believe in? Who carries you a long way? How does the team stack up when it gets tough? It's easy to have a great team or a positive team, I should say. It's not always positive and great is the same. But have a positive team when it's going well. But how do you stick together when it's not going in the right possible way?
I hear in your words, I would articulate this sense of abundance, that you can't come from a place of scarcity, but you have to come from this place of possibility. I hear in your words this place of generosity, because you're the kind of leader that doesn't have to be the smartest guy in the room. I call that the nothingness, nothing to gain, nothing to prove, nothing to lose. It's the most powerful person in the room. I hear in you this level of honor and respect for those that you've surrounded yourself with. Uh, I think those are really, really powerful leadership tactics. Is there anything you would add to that list? If somebody was listening here and say, hey, if I want to raise the game in my leadership, what would I add?
I think you, I mean, I'm almost feeling a bit overwhelmed when you say that, because I don't think about myself in that way. So I think the one about the, what can you gain and all of that is probably very true about me, because I always try to see how the team dynamics are. And if I should ask, or if I should ask, add to the list, it would be team dynamics. Figure out what, because there are star, it's, the more star players you have on the team, the more difficult the task is. They might be fantastic people, but they have ambition. They have their own way of moving. And there's a reason why, if you look at sports, it's the same coaches that get to coach all of the crazy stars, because they have drive, they want, they passion, that all that. Understanding the team, understanding the person behind the team unlocks a lot of stuff. And I often tell some of my team members that, hey, I'm going to do it the long way around, because I'm trying to not create the conflict. And you can normally, if you spend enough time with people and you understand people, you can also broker a solution without having it as an all out war or posture of I'm here, you're here, all of those types of things. So team dynamics for me would be the one thing to be super careful of. My favorite example is actually from soccer, right? Look at PSG. They bought Paris Saint-Germain. They bought all of the best players, but they never won a Champions League because they're not really a team. And then look at everywhere Pep Guardiola has gone. He's gathered a great sense of players, but there's something he does which makes them a team. And they fight for each other when it's tough, and they play in a certain style, and they have a very clear way of understanding. And it doesn't matter who they've put as head coach in Paris Saint-Germain. It was never really a team.
Oh, that's a beautiful illustration. And the lack of self-awareness, emotional intelligence, you have to have some people skills to be able to throw a lasso around. Also ego and ambition, like you said. And I think the competition, when you can channel all that in a direction together, magic can happen. And yeah. I think you're well on your way to creating magic with LMS 365. Rasmus, thanks so much for hanging out with us today.
Angus, thank you for letting me hang out with you. It was an absolute pleasure. And thank you for the kind words, by the way, of summing up the conversation. That means a lot to me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Have an awesome, awesome trip in New York, brother.
I will.
As we wrap up another episode of Evolve Leadership, thank you so much for taking time to invest in you. If there's to be any sustainable growth in your company or even in your relationships, you must grow first. And it's what I love to do for leaders, to help them grow, to challenge their thinking, sharpen self-awareness, to instill an unshakable confidence, and ultimately upgrade their sense of self. And we do this through our proprietary method called Agile EQ Plus, where we're leveraging agile leadership and emotional intelligence. We provide our signature training for individuals, and for businesses, we've designed a unique curriculum for company-wide learning and development. If you'd like to learn more about our training or to schedule a call, you can simply go to evolveleadership.org. And until next time, stay driven, keep climbing, and never stop evolving.